From jet engines to space rockets, telephones to computers, the world has seen spectacular change in the last 100 years, and the pace of progress is getting faster and faster. From electric cars to the metaverse, drone deliveries to climate solutions and genetic sequencing, we're investing in the companies that are not just changing the world today, but are also shaping the future. The Scottish Mortgage Investment Trust, managed by Baillie Gifford. Invest in progress. Capital at risk.
Hello and welcome to The Advice Show. I'm Jack Gilbert, the editor of NMA, and today I'm delighted to be joined by Simon Glazier, the director of Scottish advice firm Stewardship Wealth. Simon, thanks so much for joining me.
Jack, thank you for having me on. Appreciate it.
Yeah, well, we are virtual today, unfortunately, but I can see, Simon, you are very kitted out already for podcasts, so this must be something of a bit of a regular occurrence based on the microphone, at least.
I've run a few podcasts in my time, not very professionally, but I do enjoy it. So yes, I've got a decent mic.
Okay, well, our listeners can be assured that Simon does have a good kit in the background, I can see. Look, Simon, just wanted to kick off kind of the way we structure these podcasts, a little bit of a profile interview kind of thing. Talk me through Stewardship Wealth. How was it formed? When did you launch the firm? And what's the backstory?
Well, Stewardship Wealth was launched 7 years ago yesterday at the point we're recording this. It was our birthday yesterday, 1st of April.
Happy birthday.
Thank you very much. And it was just me. I was coming out of a larger advised firm, part of an accountancy business, and really had a sense of wanting to start something that was better aligned with my own values, my own purpose. I suppose I wanted to work in a business that I wanted to work in, is the way I put it. So I thought I would create that business. And over the years, we have grown. There are now 7 of us in total, just 2 advisors, myself and one other, and a wee support team. We work primarily in the northeast of Scotland, Aberdeen, Aberdeenshire, but we have captured a few clients who have moved away but stayed with us, or have been referred to us from further afield, and we can deal with them remotely like everybody else can. So we consider ourselves small but almost perfectly formed.
That's a lovely description of it. You made our top 100 list last year. You were shortlisted for our Scotland Awards in February. I think you just were pipped to the post by Watson and Wood. Making the shortlist, obviously, is doing something right, Simon. So just wondered what's been your best business decision since at Stewardship Wealth? What's the thing that stands out the most in terms of things you got right along the way?
So wanting to create this business that reflected me, I suppose, I made it a very purpose-driven business. That's the way I would refer to it. What are my values, and can I reflect those in the business? And one of those key values is generosity. So I started the business with a goal, with a vision, and that was to give away at least 10% of all the income, the gross income that the business generated, and live off the rest. And what that has done is it's attracted people to the business who share those values, or who find them admirable, is often the word they use. They might not do it themselves, but they see there's value in what we do. And so by operating what we think is a professional, full financial planning business, but also giving to charity, giving to the local community, has attracted good clients who refer, has attracted staff who want to work here. And I think that's helped us really grow the business organically, but maintaining the values, maintaining the culture that I started out with.
Well, that's really really admirable, Simon. I mean, I think I see this 10% target is 10% rule is on your website. So you've got to give 10% of charity to charity before anything else, before anyone else has paid, or is that?
Yeah, it's the top line. So we look over the year, we check what our gross income has been, all revenues, you know, initial charges, ongoing charges. We give away an amount every month, and then we do a sweep up every March. Our year end's just passed. Give away a chunk of money, at least hit that 10%. Often it's higher, but we can live on 90%, you know, if not less. We can be just good with our finances rather than just trying to chase the profit.
Have you ever found that tricky, or has it always been it's been okay in terms of the financial side of things? Has it been ever had a difficult year with that 10%?
It's never been a difficult year. I wouldn't put it that way. I'm quite conservative in my financial planning with the business, so I only spend money I know I've already got. So when it comes to recruiting people, I'm recruiting them based upon, if nothing happens next year, assuming markets don't completely tank, I can afford to pay you. I don't need you to bring in new business. I don't need to capture new clients. So it was a slow start. What it does mean, though, we have other values and other visions. And there's always a tension between, if we give money away, it means we can't do other things with that money. We can't recruit as fast. We can't spend as much on marketing or IT tech. But because it comes first, everything else aligns behind it. Our budget is just a bit smaller. And to be honest, because we deal with generally relatively wealthy clients, our overall income is more than we need anyway.
Well, great. And we can come on to your kind of other values and visions. I've got a couple of the follow-up questions there in a second time. But what charities are you giving this 10% to? Where's the money going?
So the majority actually goes to my local church, the church that I'm part of. I'm a trustee of the church, have been for about 18 years. And you probably see within the Christian values, there's a concept of giving that is very well known. And so Stewardship Wealth becomes what I call a faith-aligned business. It allows me to work in financial services, but operate in alignment with my personal beliefs. That does mean I attract other clients from the Christian faith, although different backgrounds and denominations. And I know that when I give to the church, that then goes on to do all sorts of good. The church volunteers and does ministry in all sorts of areas that I could never do myself. After that, we then give to typically local causes. We like to support the town we're in, Aberdeen, Aberdeenshire, and smaller charities usually. So rather than the big Oxfam or Christian Aid, we're finding those charities for whom £500 or £1,000 donation is a really big deal. And we can kind of partner with them and make them feel connected and make them feel valued.
And Simon, what something I wanted to ask you about was something in your top 100 entry, which you'd say is that you've introduced a clause committing you to only sell the business with client approval. Something which I think is a bit unusual in this this day and age, given this kind of era of consolidation and private equity and whatever else we're in. I mean, can you talk us through why you've introduced this clause to your client agreements?
Sure. So if giving 10% was the first of my visions for the business, I suppose, the very last vision for the business when I started it was to give the whole business away. So I had seen several people go through the journey of trying to extract themselves from the financial services profession when they're in some kind of ownership or equity position. And it was quite messy often. Either succession planning wasn't done very well. They were trying to sell to a larger company that shared their values, but it was really hard to get that connection. Or they ended up just kind of falling out of the system in a not very gracious way. And so I concluded, well, hey, number one, in a faith-aligned business, it's not all about me making as much profit as possible. If it was, I wouldn't be giving away 10%. Number two, it's not about me retiring one day to a nice island or a nice yacht. I don't need that. Three, if I'm a good financial planner, surely I can plan my finances during my working career, not to need to sell. And I had one client who I was helping sell his business, and it was oil-related up in Aberdeen. He got caught out timing-wise with an oil slump. He ended up having to sell 5 years later than he wanted to for about half the price. And what occurred to me then was he was totally dependent on the sale of his business to retire. He had not achieved financial independence despite owning a business. And so my approach was, can I achieve financial independence, which means not having to sell Stewardship Wealth? And if I can do that, what am I going to do with it? Well, the most tax-efficient thing to do would be give it away. And if I could give it away into the hands of whether it's the church or a charity that can manage it, that creates an income stream that is then funding charitable works long beyond my time. So the goal is to give it away. And so I enshrined that within our terms of business for clients to say, I've told you I plan on giving it away, but I could be tempted to sell. And the right paycheck comes along, I could be out of here. So let's hold myself accountable. Clients, I can't sell without your say-so, and I've told you I'm going to give it away. So it's really hard for me to turn around one day and say, sorry, guys, I've sold you, I'm out of here. it keeps me accountable to them. And I think it adds value, them knowing I'm in this for the long term. And when I do go, it's because I've put in place a structure that will continue this business with the same values, with the same culture for the long term.
I mean, it's an interesting point because often we kind of come across these consolidation activities and it does change things for the clients and things. And you do wonder how much clients are told about this beforehand, like how much they know that there's a possibility in 4 years' time or whatever it is that this advice firm gets bought by another advice firm or whoever it is, and things change, or certainly the advisors will change eventually. You know, how much, you do wonder how much they, clients are told about this kind of stuff, right?
So I've been through that in a couple of different ways. When I worked for a larger company, we would say it's great being a client of a large company, because even if one advisor moves on, the company is still there and another advisor steps in. That's great for you, client, good news. The problem is that the client builds relationship with their advisor typically. When the advisor goes, it's still a new person. It might be the same firm. It doesn't mean the same relationship. So then I started Stewardship Wealth, and prospective clients would ask the question, well, Simon, what happens if something happens to you? If you get run over a bus, who's looking after us? So of course, you have to have your locum in place. So I had to find a locum who I felt was culturally aligned and in terms of investment approach and holistic financial planning.
And they're out of the business now?
No. So that was a second firm who I could, you know, basically pass clients on to if I died or couldn't work. And you have to do that when you start out as a sole trader, an individual operating in this space. You have to have a locum. So I would speak to them and say, look, you've been in a big firm and it still doesn't work sometimes because you just get passed on to the next person. In a small firm, the same protections are in place, but my aim over time is to train somebody up to be a second advisor, if not a third in the future. So you do have that continuity. But I've then been approached over the years by clients of other firms who have experienced my advisor's retiring. They said they'd be here for the next 5 years, and a year later they were gone. And the person I've now got and the investment strategy and the values aren't the same. I'm looking for somebody I can trust longer term. And so I'm not promising I'll never leave. I'm not promising it'll be a perfect transition. I'm just trying to remove the temptation to treat Simon fairly and not treat those clients fairly when it comes to my succession planning.
Do you think that clients should have a say in this, like more of a say in this, these deals? Do you think there should be these clauses in?
It would be a nightmare. It's designed to be a nightmare. I haven't got in my terms of business, you know, unless 85% of my clients agree it's not going to happen.
It's like a board rule, you know.
Exactly. It's not a democracy here, but I'm giving them some say, I suppose. But can you imagine the consolidators starting those conversations and me turning around to them and saying, great, let's have this conversation. I've just got to speak to all my clients first of all. Oh, but it's confidential. Well, it can't be confidential if you want to buy my business, because it's an accountable public affair. And that would reduce the value, I imagine. They wouldn't have the same certainty and security. So I'm not doing it to make it work for me. I'm doing it to make it work for the client. I can see that's a good fiduciary duty, shall I say, but it's not going to be normal. I haven't heard anybody else ever mention it. It just felt to me like, yeah, it's another step that makes Stewardship Wealth a little bit different and hopefully right for the clients.
Has that ever happened to you? Have you ever been approached by a consolidation and told them about this? Or is this just a theoretical conversation?
I've never had to tell them, because I've never got to the stage where it was even a reasonable conversation.
Okay, yeah.
I get approached regularly, every month or two, sometimes with decent conversations, but they're rare. Once a year, you get a sensible approach with somebody who actually gets you. But I mean, if you were ever a client and you're being communicated to that your firm has just been sold, they're going to say, we have sold to a business that is culturally aligned. We share values. We're really similar. If you went to the market just now, Jack, and tried to look for a faith-aligned consolidator that gives 10% to charity, they don't exist. I mean, I've maybe come across one.
They're based in rural Scotland.
Yeah, exactly. Who wants to buy me? They want my clients. They want my recurring income. They don't want the commitment that I've made. And so it prevents me from being a good sales pitch.
Okay. So you're like the kind of, yeah, the poster child for people who don't want to sell up to a consolidator.
Quite possibly. I mean, and it might be a different route. There are challenges in giving the whole thing away to a charity. There are technical difficulties. My suspicion is we might go down the route of an employee ownership trust for just over 50% of the business, and then 49 and a bit goes to charity. So we retain some control within the employees and for the clients, but almost half the profits go to charity. I suspect that's going to be regulatory better solution than giving the whole charity away and then the trustees have responsibilities that they don't want.
Yeah, I was going to ask about that. So if you did give the business to the church, it would have to be into a trust, which the church is the beneficiary of, right?
Well, so the church itself is a charitable trust. Okay. So I think theoretically I could give the church the business. The problem is we have to still keep the regulator happy that the people in control of the business are able to run it and have the regulatory responsibilities and permissions. So you have to have a board in place to do that. The challenge we have is if you give this to a charity, in that moment, we've been advised that the charity trustees would almost be obliged to sell it straight away because their job is not to put the company first, it's to put the charity first. And the charity could probably better do with, you know, a few million pounds in the bank rather than this asset that it has to manage and have meetings and report on, and it's got regulations and it's got an income stream. So as a charity trustee, you might just say, let's just sell this thing. But that is the aim we're trying to avoid. So giving the charity complete control of it might cause problems. Hence, half EOT, Employee Ownership Trust, or 50.1%, 49.9% to charity. The charity can't sell it. The EOT run it, but the charity gets half the profits. And we have put in place a charitable foundation as Stewardship Wealth to be the kind of halfway house between those two solutions. So that might be the eventual destination for the business.
And Simon, I mean, look, I'm looking at you. You've got this fancy microphone set up. You know, a question we're asking advisors on these podcasts is about the tech stack. Can you talk me through your technology stack? What does it look like? Who are your main technology partners? And yeah, what's your technology stack look like?
Yeah. So if I say the following, you're going to get a very good picture of who we are. So we are evidence-based investors. We like Dimensional and Vanguard. We like Truth Software for our lifetime cash flow modeling. We are looking at some simpler solutions. We just think Truth is really robust. To be honest, I've been using it for 15 years, and it's really hard for me to learn something new. We like Money Info. We like IntelliFlow. We'd like something a bit easier to use for a business our size, but it seems to connect to everything, which is pretty good.
For a back office.
Back office, yeah.
Well, there's not many options, right?
And there's loads of options. There's just not a lot of options that connect to everything. Okay. And even what it does connect to, it doesn't connect perfectly.
Yeah.
So there's always a push and pull between, do we jump into something new and innovative and transformational? And it sounds great, but it doesn't quite connect with everything that IO does at the moment. We're still really small, which is lovely. So we could make that move and it wouldn't be catastrophic. The longer we leave it, the harder it is to move. And we wrestle with that. We're not desperately keen to be at the front end of the tech curve. We like to be late adopters, let other people take the pain, and then we'll step in behind them.
Mm. And platform-wise, do you have preferred platforms, or are you kind of using across the board?
Primarily Transact at the moment. We found them tremendous. They were good. I used to use Aberdeen, previously Standard Life. And when I started Stewardship Wealth, I couldn't secure the same terms. So they became uncompetitive. I brought some legacy clients across with me when I started the business, and they stayed with Aberdeen. Aberdeen has struggled for the past few years, and we've kind of started to make the move to not wholesale, but systematically move those right clients we can away from Aberdeen. Their recent price drop caused a wee bump in the road, but the service has been poor, whereas Transact, everything they do seems to work really well for us, partly because our system and process is designed around using them, but they're just much easier to work with. We'd love the idea of advisor as platform one day, have it built in. We're just not big enough or enthusiastic enough to retake it with two hands yet, but I can see that being something we'll wrestle with for the next few years.
Interesting. And another question we're asking everyone, Simon, is just a bit more of a, well, not a negative one, but just what your biggest challenge is. I mean, what's keeping you up at night? What's your biggest challenge as a director?
Very little keeps me up at night, actually.
That's good.
The business is robust. The staff are tremendously committed. Like I said, I'm trying to grow it organically. So I'm not looking to recruit existing people who have got the qualifications and skills into the business. One of our other values as a business is to employ people. and not to employ people so that we can grow the business and give more away, but because employing people, bringing them into this profession, I think is really valuable. I've met plenty of people who could be great in here, but because of the restrictions that used to exist, I mean, I came out of a business where it was really 9 to 5, if not 8 to 6, and you were suited and booted and you couldn't work from home and there was no flexibility. And in that environment, I was like, I want to be able to have the ability to go home and be with the kids when they're sick or go to their school assembly. You know, I want to have the flexibility of working when it suits me, and maybe that's going to be from home. And this was long before COVID. And so enshrining that in the business, the people are the most important thing, but they're also the hardest work. You know, it would be great if everybody worked 9 to 5 as a business owner, but that isn't the value of stewardship wealth. It'd be great if you didn't have to negotiate with them every year around salaries and bonuses and pensions and all this kind of stuff. So I don't massively enjoy managing people, but I enjoy working with people and having that relationship. So my hope towards, whether it's an employee ownership trust or a board running the business, is to bring some of my current employees up to speed where they can learn to run the business. I could still be in it, but I'm no longer the linchpin. And I think that's the big challenge for me. It's skilling up the people who I've brought in and trained up to be able to run a business, which is a higher level of responsibility. Can they negotiate with their colleagues around remuneration? Can they choose what software we should use and if we should change platform? Let me go and just give some good advice to some people that I love spending time with.
Mm. I mean, you obviously can't see Simon, but he's currently wearing a hoodie with, what's the branding on the hoodie?
It's a Christian church? Jumper. God loves us. We have sinned. Jesus died for us. What are you going to do about it? It's a little evangelistic jumper. But yeah, it emphasizes the point. We're allowed to do this. We talk about faith quite a lot in the business. Not everybody comes from the same Christian background. Not all our clients are Christians. But previously, I couldn't even consider talking about faith in the workplace, which is a massive part of my life. So for me, it's like, I want to work in a business where you can talk about faith, and that's what we have.
Yeah. So how has it influenced you as a financial advisor? Do you think it's changed you? Like, in terms of, well, not changed you, but do you think you are, how has the relationship between your faith and your financial planning career been?
I've seen it done well and I've seen it done badly. So really early on in my career, I worked with a fellow Christian who was a financial advisor. And what I didn't like was that she would use the church as a marketing tool. So it's like she had this captured client bank and she could work around the congregation talking to them about life assurance and mortgages and investments. So I kind of committed at the outset that I would never use my faith as a means of persuading clients to join me. You know, you're a Christian, I'm a Christian, you should use me. What it does though is people who have a belief and then find out that I'm a Christian advisor suddenly feel as though they're understood. It's hard to explain to your financial planner, I want to give all my money away, or I want to give more to charity, or it's not about retiring early and living the best life possible. So it's helped me approach client situations with my perspective of what money is for. And money is a tool and we need to use it. How are we going to use it? It's not just about what are your goals and your objectives. We try to dig into, as other financial planning firms do who are not faith-based, what are your values and what is your purpose? And when we have a client who says, you know, one of my key purposes is to, and they say some kind of faith expression, it might be to honor God or to maintain my faith or that my children grow up as Christians, I'm going, brilliant. I am well behind you. Let's use your money to achieve those goals. If someone crosses my path and says, you know, my purpose is to make as much money as possible, to retire as soon as possible, and to go and lay on a beach the rest of my life, it's like, that's really interesting. I don't think we're the right firm for you. And it doesn't matter how much money they've got. If we're not aligned culturally, I'm not going to be able to advise them well, because I'll always be fighting with their values against my values. So we just bring, I think, a slightly different angle to the value of money and the purpose of money. Actually, the Bible has a shed loads to say about money. It's a massive topic for Christians, which isn't often talked about.
The Old Testament, right? I mean, I'm just trying to remember my school days.
There's loads of it. I mean, whether it's Old Testament about the tithe, giving 10%, or not letting money be your God, or the love of money being the root of all evil. And most of Jesus' parables end up being about money and wealth and possessions. it's a really interesting angle to try and get your head around how to live in accordance with a Christian faith and within the modern Western financial structure. And you can do it. You just have to navigate it in a slightly different way.
Amazing. Well, Simon, on that note, thank you so much for chatting with us today. It's been fascinating to hear about your business and about your faith and about your history. So, Simon, thanks so much for joining me on the podcast.
You're very welcome. Thanks for having me.
From jet engines to space rockets, telephones to computers, the world has seen spectacular change in the last 100 years, and the pace of progress is getting faster and faster. From electric cars to the metaverse, drone deliveries to climate solutions and genetic sequencing, we're investing in the companies that are not just changing the world today, but are also shaping the future. The Scottish Mortgage Investment Trust, managed by Baillie Gifford. Invest in progress. Capital at risk.